You're listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Associate Professor of Pastoral Theology and Leadership.
How might the church stay missional, and how can its pastors stay missional? What might God be doing in the midst of ministry models? For a generation, we've seen so many full-time Christian leaders, full-time Christian pastors, or full-time Christian chaplains, full-time people in Christian leadership. But is that changing? What opportunities come with these shifting models? Some of you might be familiar with the terms of bivocational or multivocational ministry. And this just might be one of the things God is doing. God might be calling people into, yes, pastoral leadership and pastoral ministry alongside other kinds of work. Maybe this is by necessity, and maybe it's even by spiritual strategy. Today's guest is a great conversation partner on the subject of bivocational and multivocational ministry. Today's guest is my colleague at Wesley Seminary and my friend, Dr. Kwesi Kana. Dr. K is Associate Professor of Ethnic and Multicultural Ministry. He is a leader. He is a pastor. He is a scholar. He is a person I've learned so much from. He's a person who's made my way easier here at the seminary and has enriched so many student lives. I know that you're going to enjoy this podcast in part because Dr. K is bringing to us a free resource that he has contributed to. And that free resource is Bivocational and Beyond, Educating for Thriving Multivocational Ministry. You can find a link to a free ebook in the show notes. Be sure to check it out and make sure to read Dr. Kana's chapter in that book. But beyond, I think you're going to hear the heart of a pastor whose warm sense of ministry and whose anticipation and excitement for ministry just comes through in this episode. Stay tuned for a word from our sponsor and then enjoy the podcast.
We are Wesley and you belong here.
I'm Gloria Zikiwe and I am Wesley.
My name is Chris and guess what? I am Wesley.
I'm Ryan Wagers and I am Wesley.
My name is Julius White and I am Wesley.
My name is Jen Peterson and I am Wesley.
We recognize this beautiful diversity that the Lord has called together that is Wesley.
My name is Corey Merritt, and I am Wesley.
I am Wayne Brown, and I am Wesley.
I am Colleen Durr, and I belong here. You belong here, too, because we are Wesley.
Well, welcome to the Wesley Seminary Podcast, Dr. K.
Good to be here.
You are a legend at Wesley Seminary. I don't think that that's overstating it one bit. You have been here for, 11 years now?
Going into my 11th year, starting in July, yeah.
It is not uncommon for me to have a conversation with a student who will say something about Dr. K brought them back from the brink, or Dr. K took them aside at a prophetic moment in their education or their ministry. You've had an impact and an influence down to a person in so many ways. I'll say thank you as well. I came here and your influence was evident already in the way that you had helped to create an atmosphere for new professors like myself to thrive. And so I'm grateful for the work that you did before I even got here. And I'm honored to consider you a colleague here at the seminary. So thank you very much, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that. I think one of the things that both my wife, Sophia, Dr. S, for some of you who've had her, and I have as a philosophy is that we wanted to bring to the seminary experience what we wish we had had when we went through seminary. A lot of the ways that we interact with the students, the ways that we present the material and interact with the content and try to shape and form students, those are really coming out of sometimes the frustrations that we had when we were going through seminary. So this is a grand opportunity to make a corrective.
Now, in just a little bit, we'll get talking about bivocational ministry, and you're a recent contributor to the book, Bivocational and Beyond, Educating for Thriving Multivocational Ministry. There's going to be a link to this as a free ebook. It's published with open access. There'll be a link to it in the show notes. It's edited by Daryl Stevens. I know it's a project that you collaborated and worked on for some time. We'll get to that in a moment, but I'd love for you just to share a little bit about your story and what brings you to have something to say about bivocational or multivocational ministry?
Well, for me, it's interesting because when I first entered into ministry, the model of ministry that I had in my mind was if you're called, and in my culture, it was called to preach. So if you were called to preach, you were going to be a solo pastor that was going to be the main focus of your vocation, and you didn't have any kind of side jobs or anything to distract you. You were going to be solely focused on your congregation, and that's what you were going to do. That's one aspect. The other context as an African-American is the reality is there are many in ethnic communities and in the two-thirds world that have bivocational or multivocational ministry as the norm. And when we talk about bivocational or multivocational ministry, another way to talk about it is part-time, or you're paid part-time. You're never part-time in ministry. You're always giving more than the pay really amounts to. So the notion of doing part of your work inside the church or focused on the congregation and another part of your life being out in the work world doing another type of work is really what the essence of bivocational or multivocational ministry is. So when I first got called into ministry, I was a solo pastor in a small church. There were 27 people there when I first arrived that first Sunday. It grew, but it wasn't able financially to support me as a solo pastor. So a couple of years in, they appointed me to a second church. And that's how, you know, I finished out those first 3 years. Then I joined my wife, Sophia, in co-pastoring a new church start. In the process of that, an opportunity came for me to apply for a position as a diversity officer at a college there, Wartburg College. And so I actually became a bivocational minister at that point because I was full-time serving as a diversity officer there at Wartburg College that was maybe 12 miles away from Waterloo, Iowa. And I was co-pastoring still with my wife. So I had one foot in both administration and academia because I taught and I was administrator as well. And then I was still coming back and sharing the pulpit and sharing some of the pastoral responsibilities in the church. So some of the challenges when you look at bivocational ministry are just how to do the code shifting. You're responsible, especially if you have a 9-to-5 or something where you're clocking in and clocking out. You have to be there for that particular job out in the workforce, but your flock is still there and having needs. Now, we had the luxury of being a clergy couple, so those opportunities where the congregants may have had a need during my regular working hours, my wife was able to handle that. But if in the typical situation where you are the only pastor as a bivocational or multivocational pastor, you then have to work creatively with your congregation to figure out what happens in those times when, say, I'm a firefighter, and I can't leave. I have to be on the job for, say, three days at a time, 12-hour shifts or whatever it may be. Someone in the congregation has to deal with the visitation, the crises, the kinds of things that I cannot get to as a bivocational or multivocational pastor. So there are challenges that come with that. But as I said, in the two-thirds world, when we were missionaries in Ghana, West Africa, that was normative. There were very few clergy that only had one responsibility. In fact, the people that were ordained often were called superintendent ministers, and they were kind of like our bishops. They would have 72 churches underneath them. So while they were focused solely on church ministry, they had all these churches. Well, the people that were pastoring on the ground were bivocational. They were there for the flock. They were there preaching, but then they also had day jobs.
Two things are coming to mind. One is you mentioned the word model. Model is a great word because it gives us something to follow. At the same time, we also know that models change. Models change according to wider contexts, including geographic context, historical context, cultural context. And so it can become a bit disorienting when you say all the models that we had kind of forms our imagination and we just naturally go into that. But whenever the models start to change according to culture or custom or other factors, then it can be a bit disorienting, but at the same time, it can be freeing. And I remember speaking to a pastor that I've learned so much from named Pastor Lawrence Croswell, And in many ways, he functioned as bivocational early in his ministry. And he would tell me, Aaron, that was such a value. That was so good, because in his other work, he was meeting people to invite to church. He was meeting people right where they were. And so it was very disarming, right? Just, it wasn't the pastor inviting them, it was their friend inviting them. And they're like, oh, he's the pastor too, right? So I'd love for you to talk to us a little bit about, you were doing bivocational ministry in part because the church couldn't afford the full complement of salary and whatnot, even though it grew. Pastor Lawrence was doing bivocational ministry in part for the same reason. And he also discovered, hey, there's a discovered opportunity here too. Why else would somebody do bivocational or multivocational ministry?
Well, I think one of the benefits, and just to kind of piggyback off of what you were speaking, is this, that in the typical traditional pastoral model, there is the tendency for a pastor to become ghettoized, meaning they spend most of their time focused on the congregation and the congregation's needs. I do an exercise called paying the rent, and it goes like this. So imagine you're in a congregational setting and you're on the search committee for a new pastor, and your task is to write the top 10 tasks that this new pastor needs to do to, quote unquote, pay the rent. So I do that, and I give people about 2 minutes to write down their task list. And when we gather them together, there's the typical task. The new pastor needs to be able to be a good preacher, to teach, to visit, to counsel, keep office hours, et cetera, et cetera. I said, okay, now let's quantify each one of those tasks. When I was going through seminary, of course, preaching was very highly valued. And the rule of thumb was an hour of preparation for each minute that you preach. So I was in a 20-minute culture. So that's 20 minutes of preparation time just for the sermon. You start adding up, how long does it take for you to do a good Bible study? Well, if it's prepared content, that may be 2 or 3 hours. But if you have to write it yourself, you know, it might be 6. And you go down the line, and when you tally all of the hours that are put into these tasks, you come up with 55 to 60 some odd hours of activity that the pastor is engaged in that primarily focuses on the local church and the congregation. Now, I used this when I was the director of evangelism. So I said, so where's the time for the pastor to evangelize, to be out with people who are not part of the congregation, people who are not Christians? So one of the reasons that someone may want to look into bivocational, multivocational ministry is it automatically puts you out into the workforce, into the real world, if you will. And this goes back to a couple of things that are important. If we start thinking about the role of the church as a missional church and the pastor as one who is equipping the saints for ministry, one of the things that is helpful for a bivocational minister, and another reason for it, is that you become a role model for what you're asking the congregants to do. So if I am meeting with the congregation on Sunday, and I'm saying you need to bear witness to Christ wherever you are, in the home, in church, in government, in the workplace. And they say, that's fine for you to say, Pastor, but all you do is church work. But if I'm a bivocational pastor, I'm saying, no, remember, I'm spending part of my time here giving some service in the church, but I'm also being a witness to Christ in the workplace. And there I get a chance to enter the intimate space of other people's lives through relationship, because one of the greatest ways that we evangelize and share the good news is through our natural networks, our natural relationships. And so if I, as a pastor, a bivocational pastor, am modeling that, listen, I can talk about how when I was driving that FedEx truck on my day job, and I was with my coworkers, and we had a conversation in the break room. See, I'm modeling for the congregation the kinds of things that they can do in their workplaces, wherever they are. Or you can also share that concept. Imagine if someone, their other job was homemaker, where you spend part of your time there. And sometimes the decisions about whether or not you're going to be bivocational are economically driven. The church that I first started really couldn't afford a full-time pastor. I could have easily been part-time and a part-time homemaker, you know, with being home, raising family, then my job there would be to engage the spiritual formation of the children in the household. So wherever you are as a bivocational minister, you have the opportunity to model for the congregation the kinds of behaviors that you are asking them to exhibit.
You're talking about how the bivocational pastor, bivocational ministry itself gives such an opportunity to be a model that is relevant to the people, because suddenly you're in context that they're in as well. And there's a grittiness, right, to ministry when it's not simply theoretical, when it's actually around people. Whenever, you know, the pastor is building people up to carry the good news with them, and the pastor is out somewhere in the world, or the pastor is in their home and spending that amount of time with their children or in other significant relationships, there's a real grittiness that comes because people are imperfect and people have foibles and idiosyncrasies and all those things that can challenge us in any given moment, that remind us why we need to be filled with the Holy Spirit and developing spiritually so that what comes out of us is truly Christ. And man, unless you're right in those, the heat of that, then it's easy to forget. So you're talking about the benefit of that and how the pastor can then be a really relevant model. I'd love for you to talk to us about the chapter that you wrote. And I think it comes right out of this description that you've had about the benefit of being a model. The chapter that you wrote is about distributive ministry. Talk to us about distributive ministry and its relationship to bivocational ministry.
The concept of distributive ministry is really a team approach to pastoral care. One of the realities that has come out of this COVID pandemic, out of a 2020 study by the Harvard Institute for Religion Study, was that they interviewed people in the United Methodist Church in North Carolina. And some of the findings from that study, and these were interviews, this was not a survey, they did in-depth interviews, was that the clergy and the congregants and many of these congregations realized that the expectations for pastoral care on one person were just unreasonable. We have come to the conclusion, if we really look at pastors are generalists. When people come through any seminary educational experience, they are not experts. They have been exposed to multiple disciplines. Like in our system, we've got 6 different core courses. You take those core courses and you get exposed to and you wrestle with some concepts, and then you work out how to affect those concepts and those philosophies in your ministry practice. It was interesting in one podcast that I was a part of, one of the pastors was saying, you know, I really have no marketable skills outside of the church because we're generalists. So if we are generalists and if we're not experts and we look at the laundry list of expectations of the pastoral office and pastoral ministry, when we add up that list, if you will, from the paying the rent exercise, you'll see that whatever your denominational system is, the demands and the expectations on the pastor are really unreasonable, unrealistic, and untenable. If we can acknowledge that, then I'm contending that our challenge is to revisit the role of the pastor as equipper of the saints. So if I come in not as the person that's going to do all of the preaching, all of the teaching, all of the fill in the blank, but my job is to bring my strengths and to exercise my strengths and my gifts in those areas, as well as be on the lookout for people that may have a call on their life to, say, preach or to teach. If I'm strong in those areas, I should be preaching, setting the model, and looking for other folks to raise up. Now, let's say I'm not good at administration. Well, it's a disservice to the church if I don't try to surround myself with complementary people in a team ministry approach. So the distributive ministry, the distributive pastoral ministry really comes out of a concept from a book called Part-Time is Plenty by Jeffrey McDonald, where he speaks of the distributed pastorate. And this simply means the pastor, first of all, identifies her or his strengths and then looks in the congregation and has a corporate discernment process to determine who are the people that need to complement this pastor to create the strongest team necessary to provide the pastoral care for that specific local church. So this is really an organic process that is determined by the unique gifts and graces that God pulls together in a local church. One of the things that we see in bivocational ministry is that, again, This is normative in many ethnic communities and in the two-thirds world, but in the majority culture, it's almost looked at askance, as if this is a failure. If you're not a full-time pastor, a fully salaried pastor, then somehow you're less than. And so one of the things that we have to contend with is just the stigma that has been attached to bivocational ministry in some church cultures. There really is a value and a validity to being bivocational because it does help the pastor to have a foot both in the church and out in the world. And that moves us more toward that missional model of church that we've been called to exhibit in our practice.
Well, it's been one of my highlights of teaching in the seminary is coming across and then coming alongside bivocational, multivocational leaders, some of whom are doing that out of necessity. It's not their preference. It's what God has provided in the moment. Some of whom are doing that strategically. And man, to find the resilience that they have developed, to hear some of their stories of God showing up, and to hear the diversity of other vocations or of other ways that people are paying the bills. I can think of people who are running cleaning organizations. They are the owners of a company. Other people are working hourly, as you mentioned, some in coffee shops or restaurants. Some of these stories are just so remarkable. And the diversity of ways that God provides for them to have another source of income or another part in the mission field is really clear. And so really the sky's the limit. I want leaders and I want listeners to hear that. The very nature of multivocational ministry is that it expands the model. And it allows for more people to put into their imagination, oh, maybe I am called to ministry and it might look different. It might not fit what I think it should look like, but maybe I am called. And suddenly there's a whole slew of people that can consider a call to ministry that have never thought about that they could be called to ministry at 30, 35, 40 years old, 50 years old. They could never be called to ministry if they want to keep their company or if they want to keep a foot in this interest. Dr. K, I want to give you a chance as we start to wrap things up to have a kind of a Dr. K moment with two groups of people. One is the person who sees bivocational ministry as in their future. Maybe they just see the town is shrinking around them. The church is shrinking as a result. They still feel a sense of call. They still feel a sense of God keeping them in that place. And they see bivocational is coming their way and they're dreading it. I want you to speak to that person. The other person I want you to speak to is the person who's excited about it, right? They're kind of stepping into it and one person's dreading it. What would you say to them? The other person's excited about it. And maybe as a result of their excitement, they might not pay attention to a potential pitfall.
Yeah, I think really there is a place to talk to both of those groups. And the thing that I would say to both groups, whether they are dreading it or whether they are looking forward to it, is not only to assume the persona of a bivocational minister and what that entails, to first of all be very clear about that. The first thing that is important is that the leader become a well-differentiated person, meaning they know what their call is, they're able to stay cool and calm in the midst of heated discussions and so forth, and they can process things internally and not get in a flap or get in swayed by what's going on externally. That's the first thing. You've got to be well differentiated. The second piece is once you understand and have clearly defined your role as a bivocational minister, and everyone will have to come up with their own laundry list and their own covenant, if you will, with their congregation, is to invite the congregation into a conversation about what it means for the congregation to be a bivocational congregation. So one of the things that I stress in my article is that if the congregation then really understands the priesthood of all believers from 1 Peter, and they move in even further into Martin Luther's understanding of the universal priesthood of all believers, meaning that with your baptism, you enter into the priesthood of all believers, you are charged to, first of all, be a Christian. That's first tier Christian. And the second tier is that you're supposed to be a witness to Christ in every arena of life, home, church, government, and then later on was added work by someone down the road. So that is a monumental change. And I would even suggest that the congregants shift the nomenclature as far as the way that they're named. Instead of calling them laity, call everyone a bivocational minister. That makes me proactive. I'm not a pew sitter. I'm not a spectator. I'm a minister. That means I am actively engaged in the Christian witness. There's an expectation there. So my coming together on Sunday is an opportunity for me to think in terms of how I am going to activate my faith and be engaged in the faith. So a big piece of the puzzle, if you will, is moving from not only considering what it means to be a bivocational minister, but what does it mean to develop and cultivate a culture in the congregation where they see themselves as a bivocational congregation.
Dr. K, thanks so much for taking the time today to share with us about bivocational ministry and distributive ministry.
All right, it's been my pleasure.
Thank you, friends, for joining in. You make conversations like this possible. The Wesley Seminary podcast exists to introduce topics and resources for fruitful ministry. I trust we have done just that today. Make sure to take a look in the show notes and grab your copy of Bivocational and Beyond, Educating for Thriving Multivocational Ministry. It's a free ebook published with open access, edited by Daryl Stevens. And make sure to check out Dr. Kwesi Kanah's chapter in the book on distributive ministry. If this episode has been helpful to you, please make sure to like and subscribe, share it around on your various platforms on social media, and let other people know about the Wesley Seminary podcast. Thanks, Connor, for all your support. Appreciate you being such a great teammate. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.